how to realize an expanding universe with the help of some kind of matter component, the equation of state, P is approximately equal minus energy density. I want to stress that it should be approximately equal to minus energy density, because when we would have exact equality, then it would mean cosmological constant. And I said, in case of cosmological constant, there is no graceful exit. So, and of course, clear that what could you use, for instance, as a matter component? You could use some kind of matter component which you are describing in hydrodynamical approximation. But you also know that, for instance, if you would take some kind of hydrodynamical, normal hydrodynamical matter, then you would never get negative pressure for it, you know, right? Therefore, you have to start to think in terms of perhaps some kind of field theory, and in terms of some kind of perhaps classical fields. Then, would we use classical vector field, for instance, to realize some equation of state like we need? No, why? Because classical vector field has direction, and direction means that isotropy is spoiled. Then fermions also you cannot use, because from fermions you cannot make any kind of classical field. Fermion you can always approximate by some kind of gas, for instance, in fixed scales, but not by classical field. Therefore, the only option which is left is a scalar field. Scalar field has no direction. It could be homogeneous, right? And it could be some kind of really scalar field. Fundamental scalar field could be some kind of scalar condensate, or some kind of fermions, or the things like people use in superconductor, yeah? So it doesn't matter for me, because everything is what I am interested in effective equation of state, because only effective equation of state is relevant for dynamics in large scales. Therefore, let's consider the simplest field, which is scalar field, which by definition just satisfies Klein-Gordon equation. Yeah, where Nabla is D'Alembertian, and in a case when we have metric, that this D'Alembertian is non-trivial, because metric enters here. G is determinant of the metric, then it's dx over dx alpha, square root of minus g, g alpha beta, d over dx beta. You see, D'Alembertian is this kind of operator, and as you understand, all influence of the gravity field is here. Now, V is potential for scalar field. It could be any kind of potential, but for instance, for massive, non-scalar field without self-interaction, potential is 1/2 m squared phi squared. So in this case, of course, equation is linear, and in fact, what is called Klein-Gordon equation is this equation for scalar field in the case of massive scalar fields without self-interaction. Then, action from which this equation for scalar field is follows looks like this one. It's 1/2 g alpha beta phi alpha phi beta minus potential square root of minus g d4x, where phi alpha means just usual derivative from scalar field with respect to coordinate x alpha. Of course, usual and covariant derivative from scalar are the same. Therefore, you could write here usual derivative. Now, if I will take this action, where is this action with respect to metrics, then I will get energy momentum tensor for scalar field. And as I told you already before, energy momentum tensor can be written down for scalar field in the form of usual hydrodynamical fluid, P delta alpha beta, where P is nothing more than just Lagrangian itself, and epsilon is expressed in terms of the Lagrangian. Yeah? So U doesn't matter. It's a gradient of scalar field here. If I would consider homogeneous scalar field, where phi depends only on t coordinate, I don't need to consider generically inhomogeneous things because I showed you why, okay, this kind of inhomogeneities would disappear in a short time. Then energy density for scalar field can be written down as 1/2 of the kinetic energy of scalar field, so it's time derivative of field phi, plus potential. And pressure is given by the difference of kinetic energy minus potential. Now you understand that in principle, if you have some stage where phi dot squared is small compared to the potential term, yeah, then equation of state P is approximately minus energy density if phi dot squared is much smaller than the potential. But of course, the existence of non-zero phi dot gives you deviation from this equation of state, which we need in principle. Now, you could think that you could realize this equation of state very easily, of course. For instance, you could take as initial conditions phi dot equal to zero. Nothing contradicts to this thing. And then at the initial moment of time, equation of state P is precisely equal minus energy density. But then you know that actually derivative, second derivative of scalar field, is proportional to the derivative of the potential. If potential is very steep, then phi dot immediately will increase, and this equation of state will be spoiled. But I have to keep this equation of state, pressure is equal minus energy density, for at least 70 e-folds. Therefore, you have to put some restriction on the potential. So potential should not be too steep. Namely, it should be slow roll. And only in this case, you could have this kind of equation of state during 70 fold, and you could have successful inflation. So now let's investigate for what kind of potentials we could have this successful inflationary stage. And after that, we will consider how it's over, how I have graceful legs. But before considering generic potential and applying all kinds of slow roll approximation, I just want to solve formally the problem for the scalar field and scale factor, how it evolves in homogeneous universe in a case of massive scalar field. So, what I have to determine? I have to determine two functions. Phi as a function of time and scale factor as a function of time. For that, I need two equations, clearly. Now, as a first equation, I want just to use this Klein-Gordon equation. Substitute in this Klein-Gordon equation, phi, which depends just on time, then, first equation which you are getting, second derivative of scalar field, plus, because there comes metric here, there will be derivative from the metric. Metric is characterized by scale factor. If you would take this derivative, in the case of scalar field, then the influence of metric on the scalar field will come in the form of so-called friction term. Phi dot. You see, now, and plus, I will write here m squared phi term is equal to zero. So this equation is nothing more than just equation for harmonic oscillator with friction term, which is proportional to the Hubble constant. Yeah? So you could think already that how harmonic oscillator with friction moves. Depends, of course, how large is friction. If friction is very large, extremely large, what happens with harmonic oscillator? Then the speed which the harmonic oscillator can move, yeah, there is optimal speed, okay? So try to move your leg, okay, putting your leg in some kind of very viscous fluid. Then you understand that you cannot move it very fast, yeah, because you will just break it, and there is the optimal speed which is just determined by this equation when you skip this term. It's so-called slow roll approximation. But we will see how it comes formally. And of course, it's clear that this kind of slow roll approximation is valid only when friction, Hubble constant, is large. And when Hubble constant is large, let's write an equation for it. And let's consider the case of flat universe, because, okay, the case of non-flat universe, we already realized it goes very fast for the case of flat universe. It's 8pg divided by 3. I will set here also gravitational constant to be equal to 1, okay? So 1 half phi dot squared plus 1 half m squared phi squared. Yeah, it's energy density of square root here. Or let's take 1 half out, and then you will get here 4 pi. Now, you understand that to get large friction, you have to have large Hubble constant, and when it's possible, only when scalar field phi is large. Therefore, you could expect this kind of equation of state or inflation only when the scalar field value is large, sufficiently large. So now let's solve this system of equation. How to solve this system of equation? Two equations, yeah, very simple thing. Ordinary differential equation for two variables. So let's express first Hubble constant in terms of scalar field, and let's take and substitute it here. Then what we will get? We will get closed form equation, phi 2 dot plus square root of 12 pi. G is equal to 1, as I told you already, phi dot squared plus m squared phi squared, 1 half phi dot plus m squared phi is equal to 0. So you see, it's just second order differential equation, ordinary differential equation, but non-linear differential equation. So how to solve second order non-linear differential equation? Well, in general, of course, it's not quite clear. But here, this equation has very nice property, which simplifies its investigation. What is this nice property? Who could tell me? You see, there is no explicit time dependence here. There is, for instance, no t squared or something like this one. If there would be t squared, then it would be trapezoid for solution. But because there is no explicit time dependence here, this equation could be reduced to first order differential equation if I would consider the derivative of scalar field as a function of field phi itself. Why it's so? Because what is second derivative? Second derivative is, would be written as d phi dot over dt, right? And this thing is equal, if I will consider phi dot, the derivative of scalar field as a function of phi, this thing is nicely more than just d phi dot divided by phi. Because you understand that here is d phi over dt. So you see, and because there is no time dependence, then what kind of equation I am getting as a result? As a result, I am getting equation which looks like this one. D phi dot over d phi is equal minus square root of 12 pi from this equation. Yeah? Phi dot square plus m squared phi squared square root phi dot plus m squared phi divided by phi dot. So in the right hand side, I have function of phi and phi dot. Now, how to investigate this equation? Of course, we have to investigate it on the phase plane. And phi dot separatrix, etc. You know that when I came first time in the United States, Robert Brandenberger, with whom you write in a review, told me, let's not write the separatrix, because nobody in America knows what is this. But this is not a Russian word, of course. Just people perhaps who are taking course in special, in differential, ordinary differential equation. Not too many people here. Not here, but I mean, it was in America, not here. So, now, what is phase plane? Yeah, so you just draw the following thing. Here is phi dot velocity, and here field phi. So if you would take point, any point in this plane, given point with a given phi dot and phi coordinate, then you see you could calculate this function for the given phi dot, and it will give you derivative d phi dot over d phi. So it will give you the tangent to the solution of this equation. So you draw, for instance, okay, you would find in this point it's like this one, in this point it's like this one, in this point it's like this one. After you will draw all these derivatives in plane, it's just okay, the equation of training. You would after that try smoothly to draw the solution. Yeah? It's a equation of training. Anyway, if I will be calculating for 3, 5, etc., it will not tell you very much. You just have to sit and do it for a couple of differential equations, and then you will be doing it very, very fast. So if you would do this exercise, then you would find that the phase portrait of this equation looks in the following way. There is some attractor for all of the solutions which looks like this one. And here the number is m divided by square root of 12 pi. Here is the number of the order of 1. In Planck units, as I told you already, because I put g to be equal 1. So everything is measured in the value of scalar field in Planck units. And then how solution look like? Oh, I forgot also to draw the things like this. So if you would start here, somewhere with this initial condition, the solution goes like this one, and then join and go along this separatrix or attractor. If you start here, it's the same story. If you begin here, yeah, then it will be going like this one. And then finally, okay, after joining this separatrix, it will be going like this one. Here it's the same story from all the sides. You see, and then at this plane, of course, you cannot get exact solution of this differential equation. But what could you do? You could investigate asymptotical solution or approximate solution, you could find approximate solution in different regions. Okay, with any given accuracy. So first, let's consider what kind of regions do you see here. First of all, it's region somewhere here or somewhere here. Right? Or somewhere here. So how to characterize this region? What is special about this region? It's clear that in this region, the derivative phi dot, okay, here, is much larger than the value of phi. So it's phi dot in this region squared much larger than m squared phi squared, roughly speaking like this. Therefore, if you have solution somewhere here, or if you begin somewhere here, yeah, you could actually do it in more precise way, this kind of investigation. But look at this equation of state, yeah? So just right here, 1/2 m squared phi squared. And here, minus 1/2 m squared phi squared. So you understand that in the region where kinetic energy of scalar field is much larger than the potential energy, you could forget about potential energy, and then your equation of state in these regions is P equal approximately plus epsilon. And equation of state P is equal plus, not minus, epsilon is called ultra-hard equation of state. You see, in this kind of media, the perturbations are propagating with the speed of light. And in particular, scale factor here, or not scale factor, energy density here is proportional 1 divided by A6. Just, it follows from this conservation law, d epsilon is equal minus 3 epsilon plus P d log A, you see? So energy density drops very fast. It means that phi dot also drops very fast, and then you are joining this attractor, which is at the beginning flat. And after that, okay, when you arrive to the value of the field of the order of one, okay, you start to go like this one, and it means oscillations. So, if I would draw this potential V as a function of phi, what it would mean this thing? There is a value of field phi here of the order of one, and this motion along the attractor correspond to slow roll here. Yeah, because during this slow roll, phi dot stays constant. And phi dot is of the order of m. Yeah, if phi dot is of the order of m, look at this equation, phi is larger than 1. Which term here is more important? As the original on this flat part. This term is of the order of m squared, and this term is m squared phi dot, phi squared. So if phi is larger than 1, then it's clear that this term is more important. And this term is more important here. So it means that kinetic term could be neglected. And in principle, equation of state P is equal minus energy density. The other thing, because this kind of things is flat, then you could try to find this attractor. Always find an attractor or find a precedent with some kind of semi-arc, yeah? So you could try to find this attractor from conditions that phi d phi dot over d phi is approximately equal 0. Then if you succeed to find this thing, yeah, and after that you substitute the solution, you could find correction, etc., etc., etc. So if you use condition d phi dot over d phi is equal 0 to find this flat part of the attractor, then what you would get from here? So phi dot, as I told you already, is small compared to this term. So this square root of m squared phi squared, it will be m phi multiplied by phi dot and plus m squared phi, correct? So when this combination is equal to 0, when phi dot, phi goes away, yeah? When phi dot is equal precisely minus, okay, I want to consider this branch, yeah? Because I want to consider the decreasing of the scalar field for positive values to small values. So phi dot, square root also, you could take appropriate sign of square root. So phi dot will be equal minus, on attractor, phi dot will be equal minus n divided by 12 phi. So, phi inflationary solution dot is equal minus, approximately equal minus n divided by square root of 12 p. And if you would consider here, for instance, corrections, then you would find that corrections will be 1 divided by phi, etc. So when phi is very large, you could forget about corrections. When phi becomes of the order of 1, then you cannot trust this solution anymore. So you see that phi dot is constant. And it means that on this kind of stage, when you have attractor solution, phi inflationary as a function of time, is equal phi initial minus m divided by square root of 12 pi t minus t initial. So it's linearly decreasing function. Or the same thing could be rewritten because when phi will drop till the value of the order of 0, yeah, it's clear that there should be the end of inflation or even earlier. Better to say when phi will drop to the value of the order of 1 should be the end of inflation because it will be oscillating. You could rewrite this thing as m divided approximately square root of 12 pi tf, final moment of time, when field is vanishing, minus t. So what happens with energy density here? Energy density, as I told you already, is 1 over phi dot squared plus m squared phi. So if I will substitute an inflationary solution energy density, then energy density will be 1 half m squared divided by square root of 12 pi plus m squared phi And pressure will be difference of these quantities. So it will be 1/2, approximately, of course, m squared divided by square root of 12 pi minus m squared phi. And then you understand that when phi from this expression drops to the value of the order of 1 divided by square root of 12 pi, which is 1 divided by 6 approximately. Yeah? Then pressure, and then these two terms become comparable, and then, of course, there will be no any more equational state, pressure is equal to minus equational state. So, when field phi will drop till the value of the order of 1, 6, there should be the end of inflation. And on this graph, it would mean that you come in this region where field starts to oscillate. So, what would be the general picture of the evolution of scalar field in this case? So phi as a function of time would look like this one. So this is phi initial, that field goes down till the value 1,6 linearly with a slope f squared phi, and then after that it starts to oscillate with the amplitude which is decreasing. Yeah.
Phi squared.
Phi squared, it should be phi squared, right. Yeah. There should be no, yeah, sorry, thank you very much. Yeah, so there should be no square root here, and here should be y squared. Yeah. So you are right. Now, what happens? So you understand that the amplitude of is dropping here. So what you have? You have a linear decrease of scalar field. During this linear decrease, equation of state, pressure is approximately equal minus energy density. So deviation from this equation of state is this one. So as I told you already, this model precisely, okay, give me the behavior which I assumed in the previous lecture where h dot is in fact m squared constant, and where what decreases Hubble constant, which is proportional to the field phi. Yeah? And it decreases quite a lot during inflation. So let's find during inflation how scale factor is changing. So for that, let's write 0, 0, Friedman equation. So h squared is equal 8p g. Let me skip, yeah, it's fine. And then 1/2 here. Kinetic energy, it's clear that I can neglect during this stage when phi is larger than 1,6. So therefore, here I have approximately, of course, m squared phi squared. Then let me substitute this dependence for phi. And then what I would get, 4 pi divided by 3, m fourth, I guess. Yeah, m squared from here, phi also. Okay, I will use this formula. Divided by 12 pi tf minus t. Yeah? Then you know that Hubble constant half squared, yeah or no?
Yes.
Squared. Yeah, squared. Then, okay, let's take square root of this thing. No, okay, let me just rewrite. Thank you. A, h is equal to a dot over a. And then here I am taking square root, so square root will give me here 1 over 3, 1 over 9. So m squared over 3 tf minus t. And of course, from here, it follows that scale factor can be written down as af, constant of integration, exponent minus m squared divided by 6 tf minus t squared. You see, t is minus, and here tf minus t. When t is equal to tf, then scale factor is equal to its final value. When t is equal to t initial, you understand that this term is large, and also there is minus here. It means that the scale factor was much smaller. Of course, this equation, at the first glance, doesn't remind you the Sitter expansion. But how could you see that it's at every step is the Sitter? you could use this expression for the Hubble constant, yeah, and rewrite this thing in the following form. It's A initial. A initial is AF multiplied by exponent M squared minus M squared over 6 TEF minus TE. And then exponent, and in exponent you have HI, the value of Hubble constant at the beginning of inflation, plus current value of Hubble constant divided by 2 multiplied by T minus T initial. So now it reminds you at every stage just the Sitter expansion. But you know that Hubble constant, of course, during this expansion is changing quite a lot, because you see that Hubble constant is proportional, where it is, m squared phi. And phi can change by the orders of magnitude during this quasi-exponential expansion. You see? But nevertheless, of course, you have also this accelerated expansion. And in real models, the Hubble constant during this inflation is changing really quite a lot. But on a short interval, you could consider, of course, Hubble constant as approximately constant, and then you have quasi-de Sitter expansion. So it's a sequence of quasi-de Sitters with different cosmological constants, in fact, what you have here. Now, what is the duration of inflationary stage? Delta T is equal, in this case, what it will be, by the way? It will be time where the field phi will drop, where it is? Ah, here. From phi initial to the quantity of the order of y. And then, what will be this time interval? It will be phi initial divided by slope, yeah? And slope is f. Therefore, the duration of inflation will be square root of 12 pi, phi initial divided by f. Yeah, so it's a time during which field phi drops from phi initial linearly to the value of the order of y. And therefore, the maximal expansion, which we can get from here, okay, which follows immediately from here, the maximal ratio of the scale factors which you are getting there will be okay. So during inflation, AF to AI, scale factor is increasing if you would take into account this estimate for the duration of inflation, substitute in this formula. Yeah, you would get that A final to A initial is nothing more than just exponent 2P phi initial squared. You see? So, during this inflation, where you begin inflation is the value of scalar field phi I, scale factor could increase by this kind of, by this exponent. Therefore, if you want to have 70 e-folds here, then how large value for the scale factor you have to take? 6 you already have here. So square root, then you need 6 multiplied by 10, square root of 10, 3. When the initial value of the scalar field exceeds by factor 3 Planckian value, you already have 70 e-folds. But how large you could take, how large value you can take for phi initial if you want still stay in the range where you could trust classical physics and could forget about quantum gravity? Of course, I am not surprised, but a little bit surprised. Yeah? Nobody asked me. I'm considering the value of scalar field larger than y, larger than Planckian value. Why I allow myself to do this thing? Perhaps quantum gravity could be important there. No, why? Because what is relevant for quantum gravity is not the value of scalar field itself, but energy density. When energy density is below than Planckian energy density, then curvatures are below the Planckian curvature, and you can forget about non-perturbative quantum gravity, right? Now, what is the energy density for scalar field during this stage? It's, of course, m squared phi squared. And this quantity should be smaller than the Planckian value. Or in my units, Planckian units, this quantity should be smaller than 1. Yeah? So it means that if I begin with the value of scalar field phi I smaller than 1 divided by m, it's okay. I can forget about non-perturbative quantum gravity because energy densities are below the Planckian energy densities. Now, what is mass, typical mass, which I should have for the scalar field, which is, for instance, responsible for inflation? Okay, from this consideration, it doesn't follow anything. But as we will see in next lectures, this mass determines the amplitude of quantum fluctuations which will be generated during inflation. And to have agreement with observation, in this case, you have to take mass of the order of 10^13 GV. What does it mean, this mass 10^13 GV in Planck units? Or typical Planck mass corresponds to 10^19 GV, right? Therefore, in Planck units, this quantity is 10^-6. Therefore, in a case of the field of 10^13 GV, in principle, I could begin my inflation with the value of scalar field, the initial value of scalar field of the order of 10^6. And if I will begin inflation, yeah, with this value, then how long, how much effects I will get? I will get something tremendous, really. Okay, in the case of 10^6, you can forget, of course, about 2 pi, you will get exponent 10^12. What is this number? It's even not the number of vacuum, okay, string theory. It's much larger. Crazy. Now, in principle. But you understand that, of course, you could write this number, but you have to take it semi-seriously, and I would say not seriously at all. And in fact, as I told you before, for me, it doesn't matter how long inflation lasted before. For me, is what is matter, only last 70 e-fold out of this number. So you see, you have very good and very great expansion. So in this case, of course, if expansion really would be like this one, you would expect that the universe is extremely homogeneous and isotropic on the scale, not just 10 billion years, but it would be 10. Okay, and if I will continue 10, then it will be till the end of the lecture, yeah? Megaparsec. Yeah.
Can you say something about the inhomogeneous mode if you were doing the same analysis for a mode of momentum k?
Yeah, but there will be no. In homogeneous mode is a separate story, as I told you.
Well, you can just put m squared plus k squared.
No, absolutely not. And this will be the subject of the next lecture, because in homogeneous thing actually is a little bit more tricky than it looks at the first glance. It's not just, it's also perturbation, linear perturbation of the metric, etc., etc., etc. There are, in principle, 11 quantities which characterize them, as you understand. Some of them are gravity, something. Yeah. So you see.
Even classically, you can say something? I mean, just qualitatively, what happens at the classical level, not the quantum level.
They will be frozen. In fact, actually, quantum level, classical level, there is no big difference, as you know, okay? Because classical quantum theory are different by head or initial values. Therefore, actually, partial quantum analysis actually could be substantially reduced to the classical analysis. You see, from quantum theory comes triviality, like initial conditions. Yeah, so what?
What if you translate the result here as a varying cosmological constant?
Yeah, you could think like this one, but you see, it should be very, very cosmological constant, because You see, energy density is proportional to phi squared, right? Look, the field phi could change before it will drop by 6 orders of magnitude. It means that energy density during this inflation, epsilon initial could be epsilon plus, and epsilon final at the end of inflation will be 10 minus 12 plus. So you could speak, of course, about variant quasi-cosmological constant, but you understand that in this model, this cosmological constant is changing by 12 orders of magnitude. And when constant is changing by 12 orders of magnitude, it's hard to call it constant, right? So then also, but the most important thing also, because Hubble constant here is proportional to energy density, this 10^12 is okay, of course, it's a lot of change. But compared to the change of scale factor, 10^12 is nothing. Scale factor is exponent 10^12. Energy density is changing by 10^12, yeah? Therefore, during inflation, for instance, the change of Hubble constant initial to final is much, 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 much smaller than A final to A initial. You see? So this is important thing, that on one side, actually, something is changing during this kind of stage. But on the other side, this change is exponentially small compared to the explosion of the scale factor. From where all these kind of things like logarithmic dependencies on different quantities are coming, etc. You see? Because there should be change, but should be logarithmically slow change of the other quantities depending on the scale factor. Now, but when this stage is over of inflation, then of course scalar field begins to oscillate. And then what kind of equation of state you expect in this case? You see, also you could think differently. How you think differently about this frozen scalar field? What is, if you would take homogeneous scalar field, yeah? If you would take homogeneous scalar field with mass m, what is the typical frequency of oscillation? If you have homogeneous scalar field, forget about expansion, etc. So equation is phi dot plus m squared phi is equal to zero. What is the typical frequency of oscillation? Of course, typical frequency is mass. So typical time of oscillation in this case is 1 divided by n. So oscillator fluctuates during time 1 divided by n. What is the cosmological time? Cosmological time is inverse Hubble constant, yeah? T is of the order of 1 divided by h, because most of the models, as you have seen, h is inversely proportional to t. What is h? H is proportional to square root of energy density. And square root of energy density, what it was? It was 1 divided by m phi. Correct? Correct. So you understand that when field phi is larger than 1, the universe lives less than the time oscillator needs to make one oscillation. It's the other way of thinking about this kind of floral regime. That when universe is too young, then oscillator just have no chance to make at least one oscillation. But when field phi drops below 1, then of course cosmological time becomes very large and oscillator could do like this one. So finally, what you have? You have the picture which looks like this one. So at the beginning, this oscillator goes down slowly. And when field phi drops till the value of 1, it starts to do like this one. And of course, you know that for oscillator, if you would consider its kinetic energy, yeah, 1/2, phi dot squared, average it, yeah, then it's equal to 1/2 m squared phi squared. Average value. Potential energy is equal to kinetic energy. And what does it mean, this thing? If you would take and write pressure, average pressure, then what you would get? M squared phi squared. Yeah? You will get that these two terms go away in average. And pressure is approximately equal to zero. So what you expect? You expect that at the end of this inflationary stage, it's accompanied by the pressure stage. And it's not surprising, by the way, that this scalar field, okay, has during oscillation pressure equal to B0. Why? Because what does it mean, homogeneous scalar field? It means that there is no dependence on the special coordinates. And when there is no dependence for the special coordinate, when momenta is equal to zero, yeah? And when moment is equal to zero, then what does it mean, this thing? It means that the particle is at rest. So what you have condensate of the particles at rest with mass m, yeah? And what they are whole particles, of course, and they should behave like whole particles up to some small corrections. Well, this kind of analysis here, introducing angular coordinate, you could do more precisely. If you solve a couple differential equations, you could find how the amplitude of scalar field also is decaying. Right? So it's not a big problem. It's also done in my book, but this kind of technicalities I will skip because I will have no time for this kind of little exercises. You could do them yourself. Now, so you understand that in this kind of simple model with massive scalar field, you have good inflation, and then you have actually something like whole dust, which consists of very massive particles. But of course, we had radiation after that. So what we need to arrange the carpet of this inflaton field with the other particles, and then this inflaton field will go to the other particle, producing photons, etc., etc., etc. It's so-called stage of reheating or preheating, if you want, because during this decay of inflaton field, because it was in the condensate, there was an Einstein condensation effect could take place. I mean, amplification of the amplitude of the probability of decay by the factor which is square root of the occupation number of particles in the final state. You see, at the beginning, of course, this thing perhaps will be happening. It depends on the coupling constant, and when this kind of Bose-Einstein amplification effect takes place, okay, this regime is known as so-called parametric resonance. It's the other name for very well-known physical effects. And you could derive all formulas just applying this kind of simple consideration. Instead of writing, as people did, actually 500 papers, also I don't know what about. You see, because everybody was drawing nice diagrams for Mathieu equations, etc., 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 but in fact, okay, the results perhaps we obtained already in the first papers. Also, this kind of reheating stage could be arranged very easily. It depends on unknown particle physics. Yeah, there is interesting elements, but you could actually decay all this particle radiation what you need in one go. Anyway, there will be no traces of this kind of decay in today's observation. And also we do not know particle physics there, therefore I don't want to concentrate on this kind of reheating stage. Now, of course, you could ask me, how generic is this kind of behavior like I described? It is special for massive scalar field potential, or it could be obtained for generic class of the potential. And the answer is, of course, it could be obtained for general potential. And here, okay, I will spend 10 minutes to show you what you have to do in the case of general potential, when you don't want to draw phase diagram, yeah, and when you want to get all of the result in one go, just making smart approximations. So let's consider general potential and let's write equation for the general potential. Slow roll approximation. So general potential. Potential slow roll approximation. So, Klein-Gordon equation in the case of general potential has the same form as it was before, but here comes the derivative of the potential with respect to scalar field phi. is equal to 0. Klein-Gordon or Friedman equation is also the same for pi over 3, 1/2 pi dot squared plus v. And what we want to do? We want to find inflationary solutions of these equations. And let's use this analogy which we had already in, okay, with the case of this massive scalar field. What kind of, from which we could guess what kind of terms we could neglect in these equations. Well, first of all, I thought that when we have inflation for massive scalar field, when we have very large friction here, correct?
Correct.
So very light friction means that acceleration term could be neglected. So-called slow roll approximation. Second thing, when we have inflation, then of course equation of state P is equal to minus energy density only in the case when kinetic energy is negligible compared to potential energy. Therefore, if you want to look for inflation, you have to simplify this equation like this one. And then let's find how in this case looks solution, how function A depends on the value of scalar field phi, instead of looking for solutions for A is a function of T and phi is a function of T. So you see, Hubble constant is equal D log A over ET. And this thing should be equal square root of 8p over 3v. Now, let's rewrite equation in the following way. D log A over dt could be written down because we are interested in A as a function of phi dot, yeah? In the following form as phi dot d log A over d phi, and phi dot could be found from this first equation, correct? Correct, so there will be equal minus V phi divided by 3H D log A over D phi. And this is, of course, Hubble constant, right? This is phi root. So let's multiply, let's forget about this part of equation. Let's multiply by h. You have h squared here. And h squared is what it was, 8 pi over 3 v from this equation. So, and then you could integrate this equation, and then you will find immediately that scale factor during this stage, okay, which we are looking for, could be written down a. Is AR, initial value of scalar field, then exponent 8 pi integral from phi till phi I V divided by derivative of the potential V over D phi. So you see here, integrand is changing a little bit. Energy density means changing a little bit, but scale factor is growing, is exponential function of the change of field phi. So it reminds you very much what I found was the case of quadratic potential. Now, you could ask the question, when this solution is valid? And of course, when this solution could be valid, where I can. In the it can be valid when I can justify approximation which I did. So one approximation which I did was like this one. Phi 2 dot is much smaller than 3h phi dot of the order of v phi. Yeah, well, I forgot about this too. The second condition which I used was like phi dot squared should be much smaller than v. Now, I could use this solution, could substitute in this condition, and could find, yeah, under which conditions these two conditions are valid. And then I will arrive to the following conclusion. that these conditions, which I use to simplify equation to get these solutions, are valid only if potential satisfy the following condition. V phi over V is much smaller than 1, and V phi phi squared and V phi phi over V is also much smaller than 1. So these conditions on the potential under which I can have inflationary solution are called slow roll condition for the potential. So if potential satisfies these two conditions for some range of phi, then in this range of phi, I can have inflationary solution. You see? So you understand that you could consider completely generic potentials. Now, let's, for simplicity, take any Pavlov potential. If I will take Pavlov potential phi, proportional phi in Pavlov n, then you understand that these both conditions are satisfied for which field phi? For phi much larger than 1. Yeah? So for a case of generic Pavlov potential, if scalar field is larger than 1, you could have slow roll inflation. You could try to look for the other potential which satisfies this condition, and then you will discover or rediscover a plenty of results, so-called, okay, which we have in the literature. Just on the basis of two derivatives. Now, if I have Pavlov potential, then what is the scale factor here? How it changes as a function of time? You could substitute this potential in this formula, and then you would find the scale factor here is changing as a function of phi, precisely like in the case of quadratic potential. It's 4 pi divided by n. N is equal to 4 quadratic potential, and then here phi initial squared minus phi t squared. You see? So maximum expansion during inflation is again proportional to the initial value of scalar field squared, irrespectively how steep was this phi over n potential. So at the end, to get necessary number of effaults, you have to begin with a scalar field of the order of 3 or 5. Now let's consider, for instance, this phi in power n potential. And then we know that when scalar field drops below the 1, okay, scalar field starts to oscillate. You could ask question, what is the effective equation of state for this scalar field when it's oscillating? Or for arbitrary potential, you could ask question, what is the effective equation of state, or how pressure depends on energy density when the field is oscillating? How to get answer on this question? It's very easy, in 3 lines. Okay, and derivation of this equation of state reminds us what people call virial theorem in mechanics. So, you see, when scalar field is oscillating, what does it mean, this thing? It means that the period of oscillation is smaller than cosmological time, otherwise it would not oscillate. It means that you can have 10 oscillation and still forget about Hubble expansion. Therefore, to get equation of state, in this case, let's simplify, okay, equation for scalar field, just forgetting about oscillation. Not about Hubble expansion, because you can have 10 oscillation, okay, and Hubble is not changing at all. So, not Hubble is not changing, scale factor is not changing too much. So, there, what could you do? Let's take this equation, multiply by phi, and then average the result. So, if I multiply by phi, this equation, I could rewrite it in the following form. Phi dot minus phi dot square, it's the first term, yeah, so it's clear that here it's the same thing as phi multiplied by phi dot. Plus phi multiply v phi is equal to zero. Now, if I will average, okay, this thing, what I will get for the first term? It's periodic function, it's the total derivative of periodic function. You see, so you can take integral, what is average integral, from zero till the end, periodic function, and then divide by period. So this term, therefore, is equal to zero. You see, usually when I am teaching lectures in Munich, I tell students that when I ask questions, don't be scared, because I ask them only if the answer is zero, one, or infinity. Now, therefore, from here, we will find that phi dot squared, average squared value, is the same thing as phi v phi average squared value. And, okay, after that, it's clear what will be equation of state for an arbitrary potential. Because what is equation of state? Equation of state is the ratio of pressure to... It's called W usually, pressure divided by energy density. It's 1/2 phi dot squared expectation value, yeah, minus V expectation value in this test, 1/2 phi dot squared plus V expectation value. And then when I will substitute instead of phi dot the expression in terms of V, then what I would get that this thing is equal to phi V phi minus 2V divided by phi V phi plus 2V. Very good. Expectation value also. Now, if I will consider here now, potential V is equal to proportion phi in power n. Substituting this formula, I will get for equation of state formula n minus 2 divided by n plus 2. You see? Now, if n is equal to, which case it is? It's the case of m squared phi squared potential. Then, obviously, you are getting W is equal to 0, or pressure is equal to 0, in agreement with what I told you. If n is equal to 4, so it's potential like lambda phi 4, then what will be W? 2 divided by 6, 1/3. So W is 1, approximately 1/3, or P is equal to 1/3 of energy density. What is 1/3 of energy density? It's the same equation as for ultra-relativistic gas. So you see that equation of state for ultra-relativistic gas you could imitate just with the help of homogeneous scalar field with precisely determined configuration. And it has nothing to do with entropy, with, again, holographic principle. You see? But the structure of the universe, global structure, is precisely the same as in the case of radiation-dominated universe, when radiation has energy density or entropy also. You see? So, now, there is one more interesting thing. If you would consider here potential, like proportional logarithm phi divided by phi c, okay, critical value, substituted here, then for logarithmic potential, you understand that logarithm is very large here, but this term is of the order of 1, right? So, and this kind of equation of state is valid during the stage of oscillation. But when you forget about these terms, what kind of equation of state you are getting? You are getting equation of state pressure is equal minus energy density. So what does it mean, this thing? It means that if you would consider this kind of logarithmic convex potential as the values of phi smaller than 1, the field already oscillates, but larger than phi critical, then during this crazy oscillation, you could have equation of state pressure is equal minus energy density. So very unusual thing. So you understand that cosmological constant you could imitate already in this case, when the field is fast oscillating. How to understand this kind of equation of state? When field is fast oscillating. You see, when potential wells are so steep, then the field spends most of the time on the wall, and then jumps very fast on the other wall, spends the time, and jumps back, you know? So, but the time for jumping is small compared to the time which field spends on the wall. And therefore, when field is on the wall, and when velocity is very small, okay, this kind of regime contributes maximum to the equation of state. It's a whole fast oscillating equation. It's a little bit useless because actually Hubble constant here is not dropping, is dropping too fast. And this actually I think we found with Damov. That doesn't matter. Okay. Now last 10 minutes, blah blah blah. Okay? About all kinds of scenarios and need some kind of historical remarks. And about possibilities of having of this 1001 scenario. First of all, let me go a little bit to history. Okay, it's not Russian history, it's history, by the way, what I want to talk, and not American history. How, in fact, actually was inflation discovered and what was behind it? You see, in 1980, people tried to solve the problem of singularity, of course. And in 1980, for instance, one of the solutions which was proposed by Starobinsky is to take some kind of gravity theory, okay, with the Lagrangian r plus minus 1 over 6 r squared plus terms which gives conformal anomaly, consider this theory, and this theory clearly has solution which is the Sitter solution. Why? Because for the Sitter solution, we have a non-equal zero and constant. That is clear when you are adding a squared term, the quadratic equation has non-trivial solution. So Starobinsky has considered this theory and suggested that in this theory he could resolve the problem of singularity. Because he found the Sitter solution and assumed that universe have spent infinite time in this De Sitter stage, but because there is classical instability with respect to the homogeneous mode, solution smoothly goes away from this De Sitter stage, okay, which existed forever, and then goes to the Friedman universe. Of course, in this case, okay, he could not say that I am solving the problem homogeneity, isotropy, horizons, and because obviously they are solved in this model since De Sitter existed forever. You see, but of course this kind of idea of solution of singularity problem failed. And I will tell you in a minute why. But he nevertheless made very important step in this model also. He said that if there was this infinitely long De Sitter stage, then on this De Sitter stage, so big amount of gravity waves should be produced that it will be possible to verify the existence of this stage in the near future. But of course, at this time, the experiment even didn't dream to verify this thing. So, and the near future, he meant next couple of millenniums. Obviously. But actually, right now, nevertheless, people are making experiments to find this kind of prediction. The right Chibysov started to work on this model, and Chibysov was extremely happy that we killed Starobinsky. Why? Because what we did, we took this model and considered quantum fluctuations. You see, minimal quantum fluctuations, and we found that minimal quantum fluctuations lead to instability of this stage. And finally, this stage could have only finite duration. I will explain you, okay, in a couple of more minutes, what does it mean, this instability, when I go to the models of scalar field, yeah? But at the same time, we discovered that if this solution, nevertheless, was an intermediate scale, then you could generate the spectrum of perturbation for quantum fluctuation for the galaxy formation. But therefore, to say this model as intermediate stage, Zeldovich and Grishuk invented creation of the universe from nothing. You see? Then they discovered also that this idea of creation of the universe from nothing was not new because Tryon and Fomin did it in 73. Why you can create universe from nothing? You understand, of course, also. Because the closed universe has zero energy, therefore you don't need to spend even energy to make it like this one. You could create a lot of universes within this room. Because total energy is equal to zero. Universe could be extremely large, which is created. But the door in this other universe which you created would be extremely small, it would be 10 minus 66 centimeters squared. So, not easy to verify this theory. Then also, at 1960 or 74, there was the other activity, as you know, in particle physics theory. And in particular, people try to build some kind of, on the other side, on the particle physics side, some kind of unified models. And one of the most successful candidates at this time was SU5 Grand Unified Theory. Perhaps you don't know, but it was really actually the top of everything. But this theory, unfortunately for it, predicted the abundance of monopoles, which was in contradiction with experiment, with observations, because all kind of, there is a theorem that all unified theory which incorporate electromagnetism predict the existence of monopoles, okay, which are of Dirac, not Dirac type, but the same, okay, with the normal electromagnetic field. And so there was, of course, all these problems with singularity. Then, also in 74, 72, Kirchner and Linde discovered, and then Weinberg after this, that at very high energy symmetry in electric theory is restored at potentials like this one. Then, when temperature in the universe goes down, then potential acquires second minima, etc. Therefore, Gauss in 1981 also, came with the idea that perhaps universe was at the beginning very hot, then it was cooling, field was coming to here, and from the new, it's what in SU5 theory, from the true vacuum, this vacuum was separated by potential barrier. But nevertheless, when universe is super cooled, it goes through the stage of exponential expansion, and then Gauss noticed that in this case, there is this kind of argument in a little bit more complicated way, I'm working, related with causality. But of course, the problem here in the model which he suggested after Starobinsky model was really of drastical nature. Because when you have, you should have transition to so-called Friedman universe from this kind of supercool stage. If these two things are separated by potential barrier, how transition could happen? Only via formation of the bubbles. You see? Like this one. Because it could happen only as a result of some barrier transition. But what happens with the bubble walls? They are expanding with the speed of light, right? But what if these bubbles are located in the Sitter space, how the center of this bubble are stretched away from each other? Exponentially. So this bubble, in such a case, will never collide. This model, of course, cannot give us successful graceful exit because bubbles are empty inside and outside you have cosmological constant and you have internal expansion. You will never produce any matter. The problem of this model was realized at the beginning in the paper of Gauss, who wrote that, of course, this idea doesn't work. There, Falking wrote one paper also about the same topic, In principle, the problem looked like, in this kind of model, unsolvable. But then, in 82, Linde, and half a year after publication of Linde, Steinhardt and Albrecht wrote two papers, without too many calculations, by the way, the number of formulas is 1, 2, 3, and one is Coleman-Weinberg potential, the other is h squared is equal to 8pgO3. So, where they considered potential which looked like this one. Just wait a minute. At the beginning, it was like this one. And which is so-called common Weinberg potential, with this little thing. Actually, Linda at the beginning did this little thing. I asked him, why do you need this bloody little thing? He said, at the beginning, I couldn't, it was a psychological problem. I couldn't just forget completely about these bubble walls. And this thing gives you so-called bubble, but with so-called thick wall. In fact, there is no bubble. Inside the bubble is the scalar field, okay, with this value. And outside is this value. In fact, there is no bubble here, because if you would remove this thing, you understand that this kind of transition is very improbable, because barrier is too large. Instead of doing this kind of thing, you could take your field a little bit away from the origin with the help of quantum fluctuation, and then go smoothly like this one. And you have here so-called slow roll. In this sense, this quantum fluctuation, and even their consideration, which was done after that, of course, for this model, was precisely the same as in the model with R-squared gravity. You see? And this conformal anomaly. This scenario was called new inflationary scenario, and usually people put as the main reference to inflation, Gauss, and this Linda Albrecht-Steinhardt, in spite of the fact that it was one of the scenarios and also not first scenario. But you understand that people actually were preoccupied that before there was some kind of supercooling stage, and also the things actually were based on the model, were justified from the point of view of particle physics, namely SU5 theory. And all particle physicists were happy because this inflation was just throwing manifold problem away. So a lot of people could continue model building. You see, so it's very good to bring something to society when society could quietly look after that. Then, after that, nevertheless, this potential was, how's it called, criticized by many people as a very special potential. And of course, people were working with a scalar field mostly. Then after that, Linda considered lambda 5 for potential, and in fact, what I was talking to you today, it was called stochastic chaotic inflation, and based on lambda 5 for theory, because after this kind of recognition, that with the help of these two slow roll conditions, where they are, you could realize inflation, it became really very easy task. Then in a short time after that, it was realized also that this kind of model and all model with a scalar field like m squared, phi squared, are conformally equivalent. So you can make conformal transformation and reduce one model to the other. And of course, now this kind of scenario, which appeared even before Gauss paper, is recognized as completely legitimate and successful inflationary scenario. But it was not in historical context like this one. You understand? And of course, after that, after this kind of chaotic inflation, several people started to write a lot of models. Then, all models about which I'm talking to you are models where one scalar field is essential. When you will involve two or three scalar fields, one is responsible for fluctuations, the other for inflation, that the number of possibilities is increasing exponentially, like inflation. Actually, interesting thing with inflation, that at the beginning there was nothing, people were suffering, and at some point it became too much, really, because at the beginning it was 0.5 inflationary, successful inflationary scenarios, and after that they became 1,001 inflationary, successful inflationary scenarios. But of course, inflation is variable only when one ingredient is responsible for all the things, and it can be responsible, because otherwise, when you introduce in the game too many parameters, the theory becomes completely unpredictable. Moreover, I think, recently or non-recently, we realized that you could make inflation in more kind, kind of scalar field series, even when scalar field runs like crazy, because you could take Lagrangian, which depends on field phi, and its derivative x here is this gradient phi, four-dimensional gradient squared, kinetic energy. Then If you would consider any kind of Lagrangian with this kind of dependence on scalar field and its first derivative with an arbitrary dependence, then you could rewrite also energy momentum tensor for this field in the form of hydrodynamical fluid, and Lagrangian plays the role of pressure there, and energy density is given by the following expression. You see here its derivative with respect to x minus p. So when you can realize here equation of state E is equal minus epsilon, when this first term is small, when this first term can be small, for the standard case, when you have scalar field, this Lagrangian has a form x minus v phi. Yeah? So for the standard case, px is equal 1. And it's clear that this term is small compared to the second one only if x is very small, and x is proportional to phi dot squared. So it was so-called slow roll regime, which was known. But the other possibility to have equation of state epsilon is equal minus p exists when you can have Lagrangian which depends very weakly on kinetic energy. In this case, x can be very large, but this term can be very small, and this product, okay, you can neglect compared to this term. It's so-called k-inflation. So right now, there are millions of models, not millions, but okay, tens of models, and all of them lead to the same thing. So you could ask me what kind of model you should like. Yeah? No, you can like M squared simplest one, but I wouldn't care too much. Because as I will show, I have shown you that one of the predictions, omega equal 1, in fact, doesn't depend on the particular inflationary scenario. It depends on hydrodynamical properties of the model. And during next lectures, I will show you that the other important prediction, which is more non-trivial, prediction of the spectrum of perturbation, depends also not on the particular model, but it depends on the change, on the effective equation of state during inflation, which you could describe in terms of energy density and pressure. And all quantities could be rewritten just in terms of pressure and energy density. Yeah? Then, the model like R squared gravity, M squared, phi squared, becomes completely undistinguishable from the point of view of observation. On one side, of course, it's perhaps not very good for particle physics, but it's good for cosmologists, because cosmology could verify something, at least without relying on particle physics. You see? So next time, okay, I go to perturbations, and then we'll go to the other predictions of inflation. Okay, thank you very much.